Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's EVALYNNE, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Welcome to Autistic Voices, listeners on UK Health Radio. My voice of the week is a lady called Lally Howell. She's an autism specialist with the NHS, amongst other things. So really happy to have tracked you down and managed to pin you down to some time. Lally, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, absolutely fabulous. And people might detect a bit of an accent. So
yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about
I'm originally Italian. I do a lot of work in Italy as well as in this country, and I came when I was 20 and I read psychology in London at Royal Holloway, and I saw my very first autistic child when I was 22, so it's exactly 40 years I've been in this business with, you know, kind of working with children with autism. And I remember it was June 82 when I was working in a nursery school as a placement for my psychology degree, and I saw this, my first child with autism, and I just almost fell in love with him. You know, it was just kind of that typical Asperger-y, but very fixed, very rigid, but very literal, and that way of being literal, I've always been find it fascinating, because it can be quite amusing and can be very clever. It's a bit like the film Airplane, you know, when they just say exactly how it is, and
yes.
And often we jump. And it's something that I've learned, that, you know, we have to be a bit more logical with these children. But anyway, so after my degree, I worked in various schools and units. But quite quickly, I specialized in thinking about the family and the school, and not just the child, and have that kind of 360 degrees approach. So we don't work with the child, we work with families, we work with schools, we make sure that messages are all the same, all that really sound practice that is just so useful and important when you're working with these children. You almost forget about the child and you make sure that the environment speaks to the child, and in terms of home, school, and wherever they go. So they're well understood. I'm really sorry, I just realized I've got a bit of a low voice. I hope I can be intelligible.
So you sound great. You sound fine. Yeah,
good.
Absolutely.
Good.
No, don't be. I'm really interested in everything you say. And for listeners out there, I went on some training many years ago. I think it was the first time I accessed any training about neurodivergent children in particular, and I'd been working with children for a really long time, so I'd probably by default been working with a lot of neurodivergent children.
Yes.
But I went on some brilliant training, and it was you running it, and that was in
Okay.
Brighton and Hove back in,
Oh
God
yes.
knows, must a long time ago.
Yeah. I used to run a lot of training for all sorts of people, and
Yeah,
I still do.
you did, and it really changed my life, actually.
Oh,
It changed my life in so many ways, and you don't realize these things are kind of, a pivotal moment in your
wow.
existence until later sometimes.
Yeah. Funnily
Now,
enough, I was diagnosing a child today with a colleague, and the parents came in, and they were kind of familiar. And one parent, the father was a TA at a secondary school, and the mother worked in social care. And she said, "You don't know this, but we've been to quite a lot of your training." And I come across people who says, say that to me. And I love training. It's something that if you know that something works, you just need to tell people and let them
indeed,
know.
I'm the same. I love training as well. Absolutely big passion, and I'm a great
Yeah.
believer like you in what's the point in having any knowledge at all, or any trying anything that works or knowing something works if you're not going to
Yeah.
pass that on.
Yeah,
But listen,
absolutely.
I always start the show with gratitude because I think it's a really
Yeah.
powerful way to start anything.
Yeah.
And as you were just talking there, I was thinking how grateful I am for not just your training, but some support you gave me when I first started working therapeutically, using protective behaviors, with children with neurodivergent conditions
Yes, yeah.
at a school in Sussex. And you were my sort of clinical supervisor, and you used to give me some really brilliant tips. And one that sticks out is I was talking with a young lad who had some real trauma in his background,
Yeah.
which we don't need to go into, but he found it really, he really struggled to communicate verbally, this boy.
Yeah.
And you said to me, try getting him to sort out things like, so I've got this big sort of tub of different shapes and different colored things and different textures. And while I was with him, I asked him to sort it all out. And as he did that, he was able to then communicate much better with me. And it just sorted his thoughts out as he was sorting it. And
Yeah.
that's something that has always stuck with me, and I still use it
Oh, that's something
today.
that we still use.
Yeah. So what are you grateful for today?
Well, first of all, I'm very grateful that you invited me. It's just so humbling, and also to know that there's so many people out there listening. It's a bit daunting in a way. So I'm actually grateful that I still have this passion for my work. And it's not a chore every morning. I tried to kind of retire a few years back, but I couldn't. I could not. Working with families and children of neurodivergent people, it's a joy. So I'm just grateful that I'm in this world, really, because
Oh.
Yes, I had a lot of training, a lot of universities, masters, you name it, but the kind of the real knowledge I got it from the families I've worked with.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I know you've got a master's in autism research, and
Yeah.
I know you've been an author as well.
Yes.
I
Yeah.
discovered some of your and
Yeah.
talking about humbling, you're not someone who shouts out about what you do either,
Oh,
Lily.
I don't
So
need to.
and having not heard, not you know, we've not been in touch, we're in different parts of the country now, haven't
Yeah.
seen you for years. When I was looking around doing a bit of my research for the show on the internet, I was like, my goodness, this woman's so always busy. So I can't imagine you retiring ever.
I don't think I will ever retire.
I know. So tell us a bit about, I mean, tell listeners about what you're doing at the moment in terms of diagnostic work.
Yeah. The diagnostic work is really interesting, and I'm working at the Child Development Centre here in Brighton at the General Hospital, and I work within the autism team. So my job is to diagnose children, and is a very multidisciplinary process. We follow the the NICE clinical guidelines, of course. And we are a team of pediatricians, psychologists, and speech and language therapists. And we see children and the parents is the the kind of standard assessment where usually one of us is with the family and the other person is with the child, and then we see them separately. Then we get together. We'll see whether the our findings dovetails. We look at school comments. We look at whatever is out there that can give us some some more information about the children. We have to be very careful. This is not a blood test. It's a clinical judgment as well as tools that we have, but it's never black and white. So you have to be very careful. You also have to be very careful about this label, this neurodiversity label, which is all very well, but I'm just going to put it out there, because I just today I had a really interesting diagnostic experience with a mum this morning and a child, a good girl of 5 and a half. And I had an assistant psychologist, student psychologist observing me, and a trainee doctor, pediatric, observing me too. And the mother came from a kind of different cultural mindset, and she was struggling with the fact that, we were giving this label to her child because, according to our clinical judgment and according to the diagnostic manual, this child is autistic. She's on the autistic spectrum, but she can function. She can function quite well. She's in mainstream. She's quirky, thank goodness. And then we had a really interesting debate because the mother was saying, "Look, you are diagnosing my child, but I don't agree." So we said, well, we had a an interesting discussion. At the end, she accepted it and she said, "Look, send me the report and we need to have another conversation." So it's just to say that the diagnostic process is just, again, so individual, so different for each family, and you have to be really sensitive, really
And it
sensitive.
means different things to every person, doesn't it? I'm
Yes.
just wondering, as you're talking, I've got a question you may not have the answer to, I don't know, but does there come a point, is there an age where a child can have get it competence to decide for themselves
Oh yes.
whether they agree with the diagnosis or
Oh
not?
yeah. The moment you're an adult at 18, and it does
Okay.
happen, because I also run a private clinic with a group of colleagues, and again, we are a multidisciplinary team, very much like Seaside View is almost the same as pediatrician, psychiatrist, clinical psychologist, and speech and language therapist, and there we also see adults and young adults, and they come to us because they want the diagnosis often. So it's interesting. But we had some adults saying, "Look, do I need it?" And definitely I had a pre-call with adults who wanted the diagnosis, and I actually talked them out of it. Because age 50, they got to a stage in their life that they were functioning so well. And we had a really interesting philosophical discussion about having a label and why suddenly you want a label. Why is it because society is not able to cope with us? So, although to be neurodiverse, it's absolutely, I totally embrace and recognize that. I always find it difficult sometimes to come to terms with the fact that we need a category, and instead of all being the same. So it's a bit of a kind of idealistic discussion, but it's an interesting one to have.
It's a very interesting one to have, and I'm really, really glad you've brought that to the fore, really. We're going to just break for some music, and then we'll continue after that.
Okay.
Station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back, listeners. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer, and I'm speaking with Lally Howell. She's an autism specialist with the NHS, working with a diagnostic team at Seaside View, which is part of Brighton Hospital. Apologies if you can hear a huge aircraft in the background here. I'm right near an RAF base. So they do. And also, just before the break, we were having an interesting conversation about the sort of issues that can arise during diagnosis for children and adults. And Lally, you were saying that you've also, this is you, it makes me smile, because just before we got into this, you were talking about how you tried to retire.
Yes.
And now I find out that not only do you have a role at Seaside View as a diagnostic professional, if that's the word, but at the Child Development Centre, but you've also set up your own private diagnostic clinic.
Yes, with two colleagues. Surrey.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's the name of that place if people want to look it up?
We just call it AutismSurrey.com.
AutismSurrey.com. Okay. Yeah. So what sort of, are there any patterns with whether you're seeing more of one type of child or another? I'm thinking about gender, age.
We definitely are seeing many more girls.
There's
been such a drive to recognize autism in girls, because it does present slightly differently, and there is a masking going on, given the, you know, the different kind of brain structure and a kind of pseudo-social behaviors, even when, you know, especially when they're younger, in girls, who tend to be a bit more able to keep it together and have interests and a kind of a social, more social understanding. But the if I think about 15 years ago, we hardly saw any girls, were mainly boys. And now it's, I wouldn't say it's 50-50, because it's still the majority are boys, but there is a big increase of girls we see.
That's a good thing. I think it's, you know, like you say, it's being recognised.
Mm.
Certainly the special needs school I worked in, I was there for 6 years.
Yes.
And I would say the first four of those, we were predominantly a boys' environment. Although it was a mixed school, we probably had at least an 80-20 split, at least. When I left 2 years ago, that was certainly changing. And I still work with the school as a therapist. So because all of my therapy is done on video.
Yeah,
which is brilliant for neurodiverse young people, because they have
Absolutely.
Lots of control and choices around that.
Yes, and the pandemic was a godsend.
Well, in lots of ways it was for that. But I digress. I guess the point is that now that there are more girls at that school than ever, which is proof that more girls are being diagnosed, because then the local authorities are placing them.
Can I just apologize? I just said the pandemic was a godsend. Of course it wasn't for so many people. It was absolutely tragedy. But for the children and the people we're working with, even yesterday I was at a private school, and all the children I saw six children, were hoping to go back to lockdown.
Yes, and I agreed with you, didn't I? Because we're so used to the areas we work in.
Yeah.
So for listeners' benefit, thank you for clarifying that. And I guess I know it wasn't great for every every neurodivergent
Oh, no, of
family
course
either.
not. No.
But the reason I agreed with you was that during the lockdown, where a lot of the young people I work with had never worked on video, maybe they were, they got the experience of working on video in lessons and things like that. That when it came to accessing online therapies, they were much more prepared, because they'd got used to doing that with adults. And I've found that coming out of that, the young people I work with certainly are very open to working together collaboratively, using whiteboards and all the different tools you can use with video links now, and activity sheets we can do together. And they learned that because of the pandemic. So that's what I was referring to as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so tell us a bit about you also work as a consultant for various independent schools. So what sort of stuff do you deal with there?
Right, that's really interesting. So I do training, staff training. In fact, yesterday I was part of a department meeting, and a lot of the really interesting discussions around good teaching practice. Good teaching practice is good for neurodivergent children, but of course it's for all children. And I've worked for many, many years in education, like very much like you, and I always see that a good sound, good, you know, really good teacher can hold his children, can offer a really therapeutic experience by being clear, very very mindful of the environment, being fair, inclusive in the best possible way. So we were talking about that and how, bad teaching, and it's, you know, sometimes it is, you know, it's actually very, very detrimental for these children, because then they just become disaffected and they can't learn. So it's you know, we do a lot of staff training about that, you know, about how best to support these children in class, in school. Why PE? You know, why do we have to make them do PE? They don't want to do PE. Why they have to take 4 A levels when they'd be happy with 3, and they can do really well with 3 or 2 and do a BTEC and be much more practical. So we had all those conversations yesterday. And then I see children at 1-to-1. I rather carry on with whatever we're doing. You know, we do some anxiety management sessions. We do some exam techniques and talking about exam technique, I was talking to this boy, 13, highly intelligent with an ASC diagnosis. He was saying to me, I don't get exams. I know. And why do I have to tell everybody that I know? And that's, you know, was challenging. But I could see what he was talking about. But also, he said to me, look, you know, exams, they test your memory. They don't test the breadth of the knowledge, you know, they cannot do that. It wouldn't be better, you know, age 13, to split the exam and have, you know, 50% knowledge-based, 50% put us into groups, have a look at us, especially us with social difficulties, teach us to be with people, how to be a leader, how to be a listener, how to be a negotiator, how to, you know, kind of be there and just trying to, you know, kind of balancing things, because, you know, I don't want to lock myself up in a room and maybe be work in IT. I might want to be a lawyer, I might want to be somebody who will be with people, but I don't know how to be with people. And I thought, my goodness.
It's because so insightful, isn't it, for a 13-year-old to be, excuse me, I'm going to say that again.
Yes.
It's so insightful, isn't it, for a 13-year-old to be able to say that and articulate that. And
And then, you know, we have to label these children that, you know, they're not, they're, you know, they're different, and they can't do this and they can't do that. No, actually, they can do a lot more than we
can.
do.
They can. It's just helping them to unleash the magic, understand themselves better, and be able
Absolutely.
to articulate their needs around
Yeah,
that.
absolutely. So in independent schools, I've got a menu of things that I do, one-to-one training, group work. I do a lot of group work. I'd also I started to train the peer group. So I usually work with the sixth form and talk to students who would be interested in medicine, psychology, sociology, and say, look, come and work with me, be my assistant, and this will actually this experience will help you enormously when you write your personal statement for university. So that's really, really interesting. And I ran a group last year at one of the Brighton independent schools where it was totally young people led. I was there as a supervisor and I rarely said anything at all. It was just all the pupils teaching younger students about the social world and problem solving was magnificent.
That sounds wonderful, Lally. We're just going to break again for some ads and
Yes.
another piece of music, and then we'll come back after the break.
Yesterday, well, it seems so cool. When I walked you home, kissed goodnight. I said it's love, you said alright. It's funny how I could never cry until tonight, and you passed by hand in hand with another guy. You're dressed to kill. And guess who's dying?
Dance away in the heartache. Dance away.
Turn to stone, all together, all alone, all at once. My whole world had changed. Now I'm in the dark of the wall. Let the strobe light on them all. I close my eyes and dance till dawn.
Dance away.
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 Regenex clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Lally Howell today. Welcome back, Lally.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's really interesting. I could speak to you for hours. We've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, where can we go? Now, you were just talking before the break about that young person who was saying he didn't understand exams. I totally agree with him. I'm somebody who finds that, just doesn't make a lot of sense in today's day and age and the variety of learning styles and everything else. And also, like he said, rightly so, all it proves is memory.
Yeah.
And it doesn't prove you've digested anything or that you've actually processed anything or that you're going to be able to use any of that. It just literally memory, which.
And I remember also, can I just say very quickly about the exams? You always, that was about 30 years ago. And I was working in those days, I was working in Oxfordshire and I was supporting a young man doing GCSEs. Now is a really successful barrister, and the English literature paper question was, can you describe the main characters in the in the character of Macbeth, and the answer was yes.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
Who is right?
He's right, isn't he? That's the that's the answer to the question.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's one thing the literal responses is one thing I absolutely love. And one of the joys, I've worked with children, like I said, for 37 years, and I've worked in all sorts of things. I've worked in substance misuse and alcohol and you know, struggling families and all sorts of things like that. And I've worked in community work and youth work and sexual health work and everything. And I found that working with autistic young people, and I am generalizing here, but I find it is really common. They will just tell you like it is.
Yes.
Absolutely, 100%. So you know where you are with them. They just say, yes, that it was me.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Anyway, I'm just aware of time, and I was thinking back to your work at Seaside View as with the diagnostic team.
Yeah.
And I know that you do some work, some training with parents and carers. So it would be really remiss of me not to ask you about that.
Yes. Well, that's a very important piece of work, because then you really empower parents, and they need the knowledge, they need the understanding, because they become part of the professional team, and you just give them a tool when they know about their child autism, because there are as many autism as there are autistic children. So it's when you do the training, and we work with very few families at one time, because we want to give them the opportunity to talk about the autism of that child, you know, what it is like for that autistic child. But also what is interesting, that very often, almost always, parents, when they do an evaluation form, they say that one of the most precious things is to be in touch with other parents who are going through similar, you know, challenges, joys, you know, experiences, because very often they're very isolated.
Absolutely.
And these groups, they pull parents together, and I think that's very, very powerful. I did my first training with the National Autistic Society in Yorkshire, and was at in Barnsley, where they were based, and I did the early bird, it was called the early bird training. And it's, you know, it's one of the most precious training I've ever done. I still use the same format now, although, you know, you tweak it. But after more than 20 years, I still use that format, and it's so effective, effective.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is the most powerful work you can do is when you're working directly with children, young people and families, and individually together or in whatever way. And you need to empower those parents and carers. And as a therapist, I work very much, I work with, like you, I do a lot of work with schools, with educational environments, with other professionals and with parents and carers in a co-productive kind of way with children. But I often come across parents who feel like they're in the wilderness, or they're a bad parent, or it's a failing on their part. Not that their child's autistic, but not being able to, you know, sometimes just feeling like they can't deal with some of the sensory overload or some of the anxiety or some of the despair that their children are experiencing. And it can make them feel incredibly alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love what you're doing there. Also, before we go, you wrote a book I saw online with the National Autistic Society called Exam Advice for Young People with Autism and Asperger's Syndrome.
Well, yes, it's, you know, to call it a book is very it's a booklet, but I think I still use it, and lots of schools are using it. It's just that this idea that sometimes we just think that, you know, it's complicated, but sometimes it's actually very simple. Children need to practice, and these children need to practice a lot. And yesterday at this school, which is a fantastic school, you know, for these children, you know, they really celebrate neurodiversity very well, and the support is fantastic. They start doing exam practice for May now for these children. So they have a revision club and an exam club for these children from now. So there are no surprises.
Absolutely. And with everything, you know, being an assistant head myself, you've been a head teacher in specialist school as well. Sort of, you know, can't reinforce that enough with staff and with parents and carers that it's not enough with anything with autistic young people to give them the information and go away. They need constant reinforcement, practice, rehearsal. And
repetition is good for them. They love repetition.
Absolutely. And sometimes I work with a member of staff who might say, well, we keep doing this, it doesn't work for that child. And I say, well, you have to keep doing it. You know,
The child will tell you if it gets bored, and they don't.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing that you do as well, I mean, listeners out there, can you believe this lady tried to retire? It's an outrage, really. What would we do without you, Lolly? But you're a trustee of Team Domenica.
Oh, that's another kind of...
a passion, it sounds like.
Well, but they are so good. I always marvel at what they do in that organisation. This is an organisation which has a three-year programme for young adults with autism, and really prepares them for work in such a meaningful way. I need a day to tell you what they do. It's, you know, they have a very comprehensive website, teamdomenica.org, and if you're interested, you know, they have a fantastic video, 5 minutes video about three of their students and what they have achieved, and the achievements, the work they do. I'm just so privileged to be a trustee, because it's one of the best organizations I've ever worked with.
Yeah. Well, one of the students from the school I was an assistant head in, where I went to do that program with Team Domenica, and went on to be going into chefing.
Yes, and it's not just chefing. It's a grand hotel in Brighton. They're really ambitious. You know, yes. They're working for British Airways. They have so many companies.
Yes, and the thing is that I saw him blossom from being an incredibly introverted and shy, lacking in confidence young man, mm-hmm. to being able to be in social situations and speak with adults. And, the skills are way above and beyond just learning a
career.
They're
so good at teaching functional skills. You
absolutely.
Know, they teach, that's what it is. It's functional skills. What function does it have? I want to learn to read because I have to write a menu. And it's that sort of thing.
And of course, as the therapist, really interested in the impact on mental wealth and how being valued and a valuable member of society and contributing and feeling validated and, having meaning to your life is absolutely profound, isn't it, for your mental wealth?
Yeah.
So Team Domenica, well done for doing what you're doing. And I know you're a social enterprise charity, so we're just sending all of our love to you guys.
Oh, absolutely. They deserve it fully. They are amazing.
100%. Oh, thank you so much for your time. Before you go, just on a last note, another great organisation within Brighton and Hove is the Brighton and Hove Inclusion Service.
Oh, yes.
So you were talking to me off air about an interesting conversation you were having with BIS about the language used around ability, disability, that sort of thing.
It was, I'm sure she wouldn't mind me naming her. She's the autism lead, and her name is Sadie Gillett. And she, in fact, she posted on LinkedIn how we have to be more mindful about writing reports in a very positive way. And, just one of my ideas was, why do we have to talk about obsessions when we can talk about passions? If you're not neurodiverse, you're really into cars, then you're passionate about cars. If you're neurodiverse, you are obsessed. I don't get that.
Yeah.
So I really welcome her starting this conversation. And already yesterday and today, I was much more mindful when I was writing my report. And I made sure that everything that was really positive about this child was said at the beginning. So whoever starts reading the report saying, what a gorgeous child, this is. And within that gorgeousness, there are this kind of issues and behaviors. But it was just so important for me to hear it again, because we have this conversation but then we don't do anything about it, so I think it's important. But then again, some parents said, I want my child to be described in a way that then they can get help. But then why a child cannot get help if we describe it in a more favourable way? So again, another philosophical debate.
Well, no, that's a very, very big debate, isn't it? About the whole, how you have to write reports in order to get heard is what the message is from parents that I speak to.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been amazing talking to you.
Thank you.
Do you want to give any shameless plugs out for our listeners for Seaside View, or for, you've mentioned Team Domenica, or your clinic in Esher?
Sorry,
do you want to just give out the contact information for you?
Yes, well, Team Domenica is teamdomenica.org, and the website is great. Autism Surrey's is Autism Surrey, all one word, .com, and again, everything is there. And CSIU is about, it's the NHS.
Yes, people get referred there through their GP initially, don't they?
Yes. So it's a child development centre at the Brighton General in Brighton General Hospital. And
fantastic. And Lally, if somebody is listening who works for an independent school and they think, I'd like to talk to her, how can they get in touch with you?
Either through LinkedIn, like you have done. I'm very happy, and I use LinkedIn a lot,
Yes.
the messaging service. Or my email is Lally, Lally, Howl, Howell, or one word, at gmail.com.
Thank you very much.
I always say I try to respond within 24 hours.
Where you can, within reason. I'm considering the hundreds of other things that you do with your time, all so meaningful and wonderful. So thank you again for coming on Autistic Voices.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're welcome.
Really lovely seeing you again.
And you. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.